This is Point of Inquiry for Friday, May 4th, 2007.
Welcome to Point of Inquiry. I'm DJ Grothy. Point of Inquiry is the radio show of the Center for Inquiry, which is a think tank collaborating with SUNY Buffalo on the new Science and the Public Master's degree. CFI also has branches in Manhattan, Tampa, Hollywood, Washington, D.C., and a number of other cities all around the world. Every week on this show, we look at some of the central questions facing our society through the lens of science and reason. We do this by drawing on CFI's relationship with the leading minds of the day, including Nobel Prize-winning scientists, public intellectuals, social critics and thinkers, and renowned entertainers, and other very interesting people like today's guest, Hemant Mehta. Before we get to Hemant Mehta, here's a word from this week's sponsor.
The world is under assault today by religious extremists who invoke their particular notion of God to try and control what others think and do. One magazine is dedicated to keeping you up to date with analysis that cuts through the noise and the surprising courage to appear politically incorrect. That magazine is Free Inquiry, the world's leading journal of secular humanist opinion and commentary. Regular contributors include Richard Dawkins, Wendy Kaminer, Christopher Hitchens, Peter Singer, and Sam Harris. Their views are reasoned, thought-provoking, and to some, unpardonably infuriating. Subscribe to Free Inquiry today. 1 year, six controversial issues for $19.95. Call 1-800-458-1366 or visit us on the web at secularhumanism.org.
I sometimes get in trouble at home because I spend all day at work focusing on the religious right, their agenda, the threat I think they pose to our secular democracy, and then I go home and enjoy watching the televangelists and faith healers on TV. I love watching the praise and worship services, the big tent shows almost, and my guest today enjoys that also. Hemant Mehta is now an expert on going to church. Last year, he visited some of the best-known churches in the United States, including Joel Osteen's church in Houston and Ted Haggard's church in Colorado Springs, and then he wrote a book about it. Here's a little bit more about Hemant before we bring him on. He's an honors graduate from the University of Illinois and has been involved in secularist student activism for many years. In fact, I first got to know him when we brought him to CFI for a summer, and he became student volunteer president of our campus outreach program. He's now in graduate school at DePaul University. Welcome to Point of Inquiry, Hemant Mehta.
Thank you, DJ. I'm glad to be here. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Yeah, glad you're on the show. I've enjoyed your little book. I get a kick out of it, as I mentioned earlier, because I love watching the televangelists and the faith healers and all this sort of stuff on TV. You visited all these churches, but you started that exploration of evangelical Christianity by selling your soul. What an outrageous idea that was. How'd you come up with the idea?
Well, it's amazing to watch how it kind of gets spun in the media, but really what I did, I put this auction up on eBay that basically said, send an atheist to his local church. And that was basically it, and I talked about my background in atheism. At the time, I had been an atheist for about 8 years, and I said, my religion that I was brought up with, it's called Jainism. It's a small Indian religion, but I'd never really been exposed to Christianity throughout the whole deconversion process, if you will. But I know a lot of atheists who were Christian, who went to churches, and I really wanted to know firsthand what Christianity was like. So I put this offer on eBay that people of Christian faith, or really any faith, could send me to the church or mosque or synagogue of their choice.
So who was the highest bidder?
Well, the highest bidder turned out to be this former Christian pastor named Jim Henderson from Seattle, Washington. And he won with a $504 bid, which I donated. At the time, I owed him about 50 hours of going to a church. And he said, you know what, I'm a pastor, and I don't want to go to 50 hours of a church. So we made a deal, and he said, why don't you go to about 10 or 15 different churches around Chicago, where I'm from, and instead of creating my own website at the time and writing about it, why don't I write up my reviews or critiques on his online Christian ministry?
Oh, I see. So that's how visiting these mega churches that you went to, that's where the idea came from this one auction. So let's talk about some of the churches you went to. I'm especially interested in your attending Ted Haggard's church in Colorado. He's that minister who was recently in the news for his impressive hypocrisy.
Right. Well, this was one of the churches I visited after I was done visiting churches for Jim, but in research for writing the book. I went to Ted Haggard's church in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and, you know, really at the time, all I knew about Ted Haggard had come from basically two things. I had seen him in Time magazine as one of the most influential evangelicals in the country, and I had also watched a Richard Dawkins documentary, The Root of All Evil, and I'd seen an interaction between Dawkins and Haggard where, you know, they got into talking about evolution versus creationism.
Right. It's funny you mentioned that because in one of Dawkins' appearances on Point of Inquiry, we share a clip of that argument with Ted Haggard. That was before, of course, his ethical peccadilloes came out.
Exactly. And when I visited, it was about a month before that snafu occurred. But, yeah, one of the things that Haggard says in the clip, you know, he says to Dawkins, who's, you know, talking about why scientists believe in evolution, Haggard says something like, if you only knew the scientists I knew, then you too could be great like me. Or so, that sounded very smug, and I didn't know if that was edited to be that way or taken out of context or whatnot. But we went to his church, and, you know, let me say one good thing about his church. Of all those large churches that I visited, most of the pastors would do their sermon and leave the stage. You would never see them again the rest of the day. Haggard, we went to go see the second sermon of the day on a Sunday morning. And looking into that auditorium where he speaks from the outside, he finished his first sermon of the morning, just stepped down from the podium, and was just there smiling, talking to anyone that came up to him. So we went into the crowd as the old crowd was leaving. And after his sermon that I listened to, and I go into detail about what he spoke about in the book, afterwards, he just stepped down, and anyone could go talk to him. So we figured, hey, well, why not give this a shot? Let's go talk to him. And I went up to him, and, you know, I asked him if he had seen that clip from The Root of All Evil. And we didn't tell him about who I was or what I was doing in writing the book. It just as a curious spectator, really. And I said, you know, was that edited? Were you taken out of context? And first he said that he had never seen the clip, which was surprising to me because I've seen it a number of times at, you know, through a bunch of different atheist gatherings because it's a pretty well-played documentary. But he had never seen the clip. So I told him a little about that clip and what is said and how Haggard is portrayed. And the reaction that came from Haggard is just, Dawkins is an idiot. And that was it. And it was very blunt and it seemed very unpastor-like to me.
Unpastor-like, but also kind of salt-of-the-earth, normal Joe as well. And that could be appreciated among his base, I can imagine.
Right, and you know where he's coming from, too. And it was about a month later that the whole, you know, scandal with Ted Haggard occurred.
Yeah, the methamphetamines and the male prostitute.
Right, I was almost afraid that after that scandal broke, we were going to have to take out that section of the book because he was no longer pastor of the church. But we were able to put a little disclaimer in there that, you know, we went there before that all occurred, and it still reflected a pretty prominent pastor in his prime.
Now, I can't resist, maybe I'll get scolded for this, but his ethical snafu, I should say for our listeners who are unfamiliar, well, Ted Haggard was somehow involved or interested in methamphetamine, and there was a male prostitute, and, you know, all these details that are widely reported. It's not just gossip on Point of Inquiry, but it was impressive hypocrisy.
Right, and you know, just the fact that he was kind of going around it, saying that, you know, he bought the methamphetamines, but just, you know, flushed it down the toilet, never actually used it, you know, just left a bad taste in a lot of Christians' mouths as well. You know, this is a pastor who was the president of the National Association of Evangelicals.
Hemet, tell me about a couple other churches you went to. You know, you went to Ted Haggard's church. Here's a mega church, this massive, big, popular figure. Did you go to the corner church, you know, where a bunch of well-meaning, hardworking, sincere Christians get together and, you know, they're really interested in making the world a better place? Or did you only go to these very glitzy, entertainment-like arenas of Christianity?
You know, I actually went to a wide spectrum of churches. We didn't want all mega churches because that's not where all Christians go to. Let me tell you about two experiences in particular. One was a church I went to in DeKalb in northern Illinois. And in that city, you know, I went to one church that was a very small building, you know, a very small room, but it seemed to me when I walked in there, you know, this has got to be a tight-knit community. You know, there's so few of them there that they all got to know each other. They must all, you know, be pretty happy with each other there. And yet I saw so many people walking in late as the music was going on, as the pastor was starting, which seemed kind of rude to me because especially in a small community, you figure you must know who the singers are and who's the band and who the pastor is. So to walk in late, that seemed kind of odd. But even more interesting, I would have thought all those families would have been excited to see each other on a Sunday morning, and yet all the parents and all their children that they brought with them, they kind of sat in their own little world, separated from all the other families, you know? And that was surprising to me. I didn't expect to see, you know, that so much of a separation when I went to that small church.
It's interesting to hear your impressions of these experiences you've had in these churches. Did you come away from it concluding new things about Christians or the sociology of Christianity or how churches work, why the good ones work as well as they do, why failing churches fail? I mean, did you come out with a body of knowledge, or like was this research, or you just went for the experience?
Well, I did go for the experience, but I did come away with a lot of conclusions, and I write about them in the book, too. One of the best things I saw in these churches, and this is the second type of church I was alluding to earlier, there were a number of churches I went to that were doing amazing, amazing community service. I mean, they were tutoring children in their area. They were helping people who needed help, and they weren't proselytizing. They weren't trying to convert other people to Christianity. They just felt that, you know, they were Christian. They have to do something good. And they were out there doing it. And I support what they're doing, even if I don't agree with their belief as to why they might be doing it. At the same time, there were a lot of churches that really put on that air of it's us versus them, and everything that we see in the media, everything we see in culture is a threat to the church, which you know, I don't agree with at all. And it was kind of offensive, the things they were saying about atheists, about Muslims, about people who were just not of their fold. And when they kind of put up that dichotomy, it was just kind of striking because I was the other person in the room. I was the person that they were against. And I kind of felt excluded and kind of offended that they were saying these incorrect things about people like me.
Here you are, an atheist with firsthand experiences of the cultural competitors that get your ire up. You know, you're an atheist, but you're in the lion's den, so to speak. You're with the Christians. If you were going to generalize, would you say they were all of one stripe or another stripe? Were they all of this us and them mentality, or were more of them concerned about social services and making the world a better place? Was it an even mix? What's your take?
You know, there were so many different types of churches I went to, so many different types of Christians that I met. One of the interesting things is, you know, after I finished going to the churches for Jim Henderson, I started my own website, friendlyatheist.com, which was a blog where I could talk about these issues and invite people to comment on what I'm writing. And the amazing thing is there are a lot of Christians that were really interested in joining that dialogue. And very different from a lot of the churches I went to, the people commenting on the site were very respectful about where atheists were coming from. They really wanted to know what people like me thought. And they wanted to kind of explain things that we may not understand coming from a non-Christian perspective. And that's a wonderful dialogue. And this is not the type of thing I was seeing in a lot of the churches. So, I mean, to answer your question, they were coming from all over the place. They were not all dyed-in-the-wool, you know, religious right type of Christians. There were plenty liberal Christians that want to see separation of church and state, that support progressive causes. And I don't know why a lot of atheists feel like we should alienate them as well. Because I think we make a mistake sometimes as atheists of categorizing all Christians as the same type of fundamentalists, and that really is not the case.
I'd like to let our listeners know that you can get a copy of Hemant's book, I Sold My Soul, on eBay, Viewing Faith Through an Atheist's Eyes, through our website, pointofinquiry.org. Another question about your impressions of Christianity in general from your experiences, Hemant. Some sociologists of religion are now talking about how within these powerhouse churches that it's kind of anti-creedal. You don't show up and have to sign on a dotted line that you believe in this, that, and the other specific creed of this version of Christianity. Instead, it's a lot about praise and worship. There's heights of emotion, you know, clapping and singing and tears and feelings of love and, you know, the fellow feeling of kind of all being part of something bigger. Was that your impression too? Or did you find that in fact, pastors are demanding their parishioners believe specific things about the world?
Well, you know, one of the mega churches I went to was Willow Creek, and this is probably it's the number one mega church in the country, according to some Christian magazines. But yeah, it's the largest one of its kind, really the spearhead of all the mega churches in the country. And you know, I went there expecting to hear exactly what you just said, that maybe they were going to make me sign on a dotted line, you know, and they were going to say during the sermon that here's what we believe and gay marriage is wrong and, you know, just kind of spouting out those thoughts. And I didn't hear that. I did hear a lot of the praise and worship, and there were very little stances on issues or anything like that. The interesting thing, though, was, you know, when I looked at their brochures and their pamphlets for what was going on during the course of the week, not on a Sunday, not on a weekend sermon, but during the course of the week, they did address a lot of these issues. And in those cases, for example, if you talk about evolution versus intelligent design, you know, they had a program one year called Who's Your Daddy, where, you know, they brought in someone to talk about intelligent design. And, you know, they don't really bring in any evolutionary biologists to kind of counter what they're saying. And I had a chance to ask one of the pastors why that was the case. When you have a church that big with the funding to be able to really bring in someone who's an expert in the field, why didn't they do that? And the pastor I spoke to at the time just kind of said, well, we do have time for a rebuttal to what the person is saying, but really that came during the question and answer session. So, you know, they didn't talk about it during the sermon itself, but during the programs they put into place during the week, it was pretty evident that, you know, there wasn't room for that many different views on certain issues.
One of my favorite TV preachers, and maybe he's not one of my favorites because they're all my favorites. I don't know if I like Creflo Dollar or Benny Hinn, but the guy I'm talking about right now is Joel Osteen. You listen to one of his sermons, and there's not a lot of religion in it, and maybe he'd take that as a compliment. There's a lot of practical philosophy. Hey, everybody, how do you get along with your boss at work better? How do you be a better citizen, a better neighbor? How do you avoid those fights with your wife? How do you be a better parent? I think this is equally true for Joyce Meyer, or maybe it's Myers from St. Louis. These are practical philosophers. I don't know that they're teaching doctrinal Christianity as much as they're just giving good advice for how to live a better life. I don't know how good the advice is, incidentally, but I wondered your take on that. Did you find that the messages by and large you got were, call it biblical Christianity, or was it that Norman Vincent Peale kind of positive thinking, live a better life now sort of stuff?
Well, I did go to Joel Osteen's church, and he did preach what a lot of people call the prosperity gospel, that your life can get better. And you're right, there wasn't a lot of religion in it, and he gets criticized by a lot of Christians for that. You know, they call him Christianity Light. But when I went there, you know, Joel Osteen is one of those pastors who I really enjoy watching, and maybe for the same reasons you do. I think he's a fabulous speaker. I like what he says, and I think if that was a religion that more Christians subscribe to, his version of what Christianity should be, I don't think we'd have as many divisive issues in politics, in the world, things like that. At the same time, I know it's not heavy on biblical doctrine. So it was a very different experience going from, you know, Ted Haggard's church to Joel Osteen's church. I mean, you have huge differences there. But, you know, there were things to like about both of them, and I almost wish you could pick and choose some of those best parts of them from those sermons, because I think atheists and non-Christians could learn a lot from what they have to say. But again, when they get into those really doctrinal issues, you come across a lot of problems with what they're saying. But, you know, Joel managed to avoid that, and I kind of liked that about him.
You talked earlier about atheists and secularists, free thinkers and rationalists painting with too broad a brush sometimes, categorizing all Christians as fundamentalists. You call yourself the friendly atheist. Is that to draw a distinction between yourself and all those kind of piss and vinegar atheists out there?
You know, I didn't actually come up with that name to separate myself from, you know, those quote-unquote angry atheists or those fundamentalist atheists. Really, when I had that name in mind, I was just thinking all the atheists, secular humanists I know are good, kind people. I mean, sure, there are some bad eggs in the bunch, but by and large, we are good, friendly people. And so I just wanted people to put those two words together, you know, friendly and atheist, because to me, that's what everyone's like. You know, I think Richard Dawkins is a friendly atheist. I think Sam Harris is a friendly atheist. And I know people might disagree with my take on that, but that wasn't to separate me from other versions, if you will, of atheism or anything like that. That's just what I think of pretty much all the atheists that I've met.
Right. I found Dawkins to be not just genteel, but gentle and kind and warm-hearted. He's the kind of Christian you want next door, except for the, you know, the Christian beliefs. Before we finish up, I want to talk to you really about why you're doing this. You're obviously an atheist. You know, you and I go way back. We know that each of us lacks belief in God. Lacking belief in God and then visiting churches to learn about the, in quotes, enemy, and maybe that's up for grabs, maybe they're not the enemy. By some lights, doing what you've done is anti-Christian. Are you hoping that your book will somehow expose Christianity? I mean, why would a friendly atheist be interested in going to church?
Well, you know what? Let me say one thing. This book, the idea for this book actually came from a Christian book publisher. And I think it's the first time that an atheist has written explicitly about an atheist viewpoint for a Christian publisher.
So you're not trying to stick it to the Christians by writing this book?
No, I'm trying to help Christians understand that, you know, if they're so intent on talking to non-believers about what they're all about and what their church can do, look at all the things they're doing that turn people like me off.
Well, Hemet, let me ask you, why are you helping them market better?
Right, and it's not about marketing better. I do think if they really, you know, I do think they're allowed to put their best foot forward, and it's very easy to rip down people like Ted Haggard when they say things, or if you see Jesus Camp or Root of All Evil, it's very easy to rip it down. But I think if we really want to, you know, scrutinize our own beliefs, or non-belief, if you will, then we got to see what their best, give us what they've got, you know? Let us see the best of what they have. I'm not afraid of that because I don't think they have anything that's going to convince me there is a God, but I'm willing to see it.
Are you open-minded, by the way? Could you see yourself becoming a Christian someday?
I'm open-minded if I see the evidence. I haven't seen it yet, but I think most atheists would say the exact same thing. But I should say, you know, I know a lot of people will criticize me for writing a book geared towards Christians or saying, you know, this is how to make your church a better place. But really, the things I'm advising the churches to do in I Sold My Soul on eBay, it's not saying, you know, condemn other people. It's not saying, you know, you're going to be right on the political issues or anything like that.
Dare I say, Hemet, you're suggesting that they be more humanistic. So you wrote this book for Christians, whether it's to help them make their churches more inviting to atheists, give them a better sales pitch, I don't know. But why should an atheist, why should a secularist, a humanist be interested in reading this book?
I think there's a lot of material in there that atheists could find helpful in learning what these churches are about, what part of our own stereotypes as, you know, atheists reading the book. We have a lot of images of what churches are like. And a lot of those images really aren't the case. And I think we could learn a lot by learning about what Christian churches are really like. The other really nice thing about it, you know, I've had a lot of Christian friends say, you got to read this book, you know, and they'll give me a Lee Strobel book or a C.S. Lewis book. And they'll say, you got to read this book. And there was really nothing you could give them back in return. I guess now we have some books like The God Delusion that you could. But I think this is a book that Christians would not be afraid of reading. You know, an atheist could hand this to a Christian, and I hope they could say, look, this is where I'm coming from as an atheist. This is the mindset that I have, and if you want to understand me better, read this book, and I hope you enjoy it.
Last question. Do you like Christians more now or less now after visiting so many of these churches?
You know, there is a wide spectrum there. One of the nice things that this project did is it really put Christians on a big spectrum for me. I didn't know there were so many liberal Christians out there that are just as upset with the religious right as I am as an atheist. At the same time, I didn't really realize the extent that people could be fundamentalists, and I met a number of those too. You know, I was on this Christian TV show that just aired recently, and as a result of that show airing, I got so many responses from Christians, a few of whom were actually interested in this dialogue, and they started posting comments on my website, which is wonderful. at the same time, there were a lot of what I like to call drive-by prayings on the website. People who just send me emails saying, I'm praying for you, or just open your heart and Jesus will come in, but they're not interested in hearing my response.
I have my file of those, and it grows over the years, and every now and then, if you want to pick me up, just go through those and read them, and they light a little more fire under your tuchus. Hemant, thanks for joining me on Point of Inquiry, and we look forward to having you back.
Thank you for having me, DJ.
You've seen the headlines. Bill seeks to protect students from liberal bias. The right time for an Islamic reformation. Kansas school board redefined science. These stories sum up the immense challenge facing those of us who defend rational thinking, science, and secular values. What one advisor to the Bush administration dismissed as the reality-based community. Who could have imagined that reality would need defenders? The educational and advocacy work of the Center for Inquiry is more essential than ever, and your support is more essential than ever. Show your commitment to science, reason, and secular values by becoming a friend of the Center today. Whether you are interested in the work of PsyCop and Skeptical Inquirer magazine, the Council for Secular Humanism and Free Inquiry magazine, the Commission for Scientific Medicine, or Center for Inquiry on campus, by becoming a friend of the Center, you'll help strengthen our impact. If you're just learning about CFI, take a look at our website, www.centerforinquiry.net. We host regional and international conferences, college courses, and nationwide campus outreach. You'll also find out about our new representation at the United Nations and important national media appearances. We cannot pursue these projects without your help. Please become a friend of the Center today by calling 1-800-818-7071 or visiting www.centerforinquiry.net. We look forward to working with you to enlarge the reality-based community.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Point of Inquiry. To get involved with an online conversation about today's episode or about any number of other subjects of interest to secularists and freethinkers, nullifidians and rationalists, atheists and agnostics and skeptics, well, the kind of people who like listening to Point of Inquiry, you should go to www.cfi-forums.org. Doing so, you'll bump into people just like yourself, and you'll be able to thrash it out and enjoy some fun conversation in our growing online community. Views expressed on Point of Inquiry don't necessarily reflect the views of the Center for Inquiry nor its affiliated organizations. Questions and comments on today's show can be sent to feedback@pointofinquiry.org or by visiting our website, pointofinquiry.org. Point of Inquiry is produced by Thomas Donnelly and recorded at the Center for Inquiry in Amherst, New York. Executive producer is Paul Kurtz. Point of Inquiry's music is composed for us by Emmy Award-winning Michael Whalen. Contributors to today's show included Debbie Goddard and Sarah Jordan, and I'm your host, DJ Grothy.